red states got redder on Tuesday and the blue states got bluer. Where do we sit as a nation generally? About in the same place we were before.
We will try to explain what happened in Tuesday's U.S. midterm elections. This is Thursday, November 8th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melbourne in Washington. Also ahead, how the election results are being received worldwide. A meeting between the two top foreign affairs officials of the U.S. and North Korea has been postponed. We'll find out what a Korean expert has to say about that. All that and more on VOA Asia. We begin our program today with the U.S. midterm elections. President Donald Trump is boasting of a very big win in Tuesday's national congressional elections after Republicans strengthened their hold on the Senate, even as Democrats took control of the House of Representatives for the first time in 8 years, with Democrats claiming victory with that accomplishment. We have asked VOA national correspondent Jim Malone to try to make sense of all of this. Jim, who won the election?
Well, I'll say this. For a long time, Ira, we've talked about the polarization of the United States politically. And if we start looking at what we call red states and blue states, representing Republican and Democratic states, I think the red states got redder on Tuesday and the blue states got bluer. Where do we sit as a nation generally? About in the same place we were before. The only difference is Democrats do now have an in on the congressional leadership. They can more effectively check President Trump's agenda. They could start to investigate administration allegations of wrongdoing through the oversight function of Congress. So that will change the dynamic a bit. But I think that Trump's ability to campaign for Senate Democrats and the fact that they increased their numbers will be seen by Republicans as an effective strategy, not only for this election, but for Mr. Trump's own reelection 2 years hence.
Well, he's going to face a lot more scrutiny, obviously, at least from the House of Representatives. What about the question of impeachment of the president? Do you think there's a possibility of that happening?
You know, I think as we watched some of the Senate Democratic seats slip away, I think so too did a real push for impeachment. I think they can tell that the wave is just not big enough to kind of force the hand and give the Democrats enough political leverage to try to bring that about. It doesn't mean that some Democrats won't want to pursue that. And we still have the Robert Mueller Russia probe hanging out there. We don't know where that's going to go and what that might lead to. But I have a feeling, and just listening to Speaker or, you know, House Democratic Leader Nancy Pelosi, perhaps soon to be House Speaker again, talking about possibly some bipartisan working with Trump. She's not talking about impeachment. She is talking about oversight. I think the Democrats are going to pursue carefully on that right now.
Where do you think President Trump is going with this investigation? We found out Wednesday afternoon that Attorney General Jeff Sessions had submitted his resignations, as he had been asked to by the president. He said in the letter, where does this leave this whole situation?
You know, one thing I thought of even during the election returns coming in with the increased majority in the Senate, I did have a thought to myself if that might embolden President Trump to make a move on the Russia probe, knowing that his situation in the Senate was improving and that any impeachment move eventually is decided in the Senate. And it would make it less likely of any conviction because of increased numbers of Republicans. That being said, I think, Democrats are on guard at the moment about what the Sessions departure means. They're going to be watching it very carefully. I was watching the Senate Democratic leader, Chuck Schumer, at a news conference talking about the new, political landscape in Washington when he was handed the note about Sessions' departure. And he immediately got sort of defensive and said everything will be done to protect the Mueller probe. That's obviously the first thing the Democrats are on guard now. But we'll see. I see a President Trump now in the wake of the midterm results who is both, in one sense, embattled, but also emboldened. And where that goes, I don't know.
Well, which way are his ideas going to go, as we know with his predecessor in the White House? Because of a Congress that was not with him, there was total deadlock.
Yes, and on one hand, President Obama was able to survive that, win a second term in some ways by playing off the Republican Congress. Bill Clinton had a similar strategy. Now we'll see what Donald Trump does about his reelection strategy. Will he kind of use the Democrats in the House as a straw man, so to speak, to punish them politically, to, you know, have a foil, have a target as he tries to, you know, bolster his own reelection opportunities in 2020. The thing we saw on Tuesday night was Trump doing well in the states he carried in 2016, but slipping in some of those Democratic blue states, including a few that delivered the White House for him in 2016. If he is weakened there, because now you have Democratic governors in key states like Wisconsin, like Michigan that weren't there before, this could have an impact on the 2020 presidential race. But this is a president, I think, who through his campaigns for the Republican senators and his tough rhetoric on immigration, I'm pretty sure he's convinced that worked. So I would think we're going to hear more of that.
Jim Malone is VOA's national correspondent. As always, thank you, Jim.
You bet.
We invite you to read more on our top story. Just follow us on Facebook at VOA Asia and the voanews.com website. These are among the top Asia stories you'll find right now on voanews.com. China and Russia pledged to boost economic cooperation at a meeting in Beijing. The Chinese premier and the Russian prime minister condemned protectionism and agreed to expand cooperation in various areas. Officials in Afghanistan are hailing a U.S. decision to exempt from anti-Iran sanctions the development of the Iranian port of Chabahar, in recognition of its role to grow the Afghan economy. Pakistan has removed the acting chief of state-run television there after a caption read, "Begging," instead of "Beijing," during a broadcast of Prime Minister Imran Khan's visit to China, which has promised economic aid to the impoverished South Asian country. This is VOA Asia. We continue now. World leaders have been reacting to the U.S. midterm election results as America's partners and rivals try to decipher what the Democratic Party's new majority in the House of Representatives could mean for the future of President Trump's foreign policy agenda in the coming years. Henry Ridgewell reports from London.
As it became clear that they had won control of the House Tuesday night, Democrat celebrations began as Minority Speaker Nancy Pelosi declared a new day in America. Is it a new dawn, too, for American foreign policy? Not so, says Professor Peter Trubowitz, director of the U.S. Center at the London School of Economics and Political Science.
The main play that Donald Trump now has is on the foreign policy side, where he has much more discretionary authority and room to maneuver than he does on the domestic side. So I would actually look for Trump to double down on trade with China, on Iran, and on the border with Mexico.
Trubowitz says Democrats may offer support for Trump's stance on China. Washington has imposed tariffs on $250 billion in imports, accusing Beijing of unfair trade practices. Chinese officials did not comment on the election results. World leaders will now be wondering what comes next in America, says analyst Trubowitz.
Whether or not to wait Donald Trump out. In other words, to play for time over the next 2 years. This will be the calculation being made in Tehran, in Beijing, and perhaps in some European capitals as well.
That calculation would appear tough to solve, with U.S. politics seen as increasingly volatile. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
Happening now in Asia, the Bangladeshi immigrant living in New York City is awaiting sentencing after being convicted of setting off a pipe bomb in New York City's busiest subway station. Akayad Ullah disputed openly in court Tuesday the prosecutor's claim that he was supporting the Islamic State group, saying he was instead motivated by anger at President Donald Trump. Stay up to date with VOA. This is VOA Asia. We're happy you're with us on VOA Asia. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo's planned meeting with a senior North Korean official Thursday in New York City has been postponed. The State Department issued a statement Wednesday saying the meeting will now take place at a later date. The statement did not give a reason why the meeting was called off. Pompeo was slated to hold talks with Kim Jong-chol, a senior advisor to North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. In announcing the meeting earlier this week, the State Department said the two men would discuss making progress on all four pillars of the Singapore Summit joint statement, including achieving the final, fully verified denuclearization of North Korea. Joining us on VOA Asia is Joel Witt, senior fellow at the Stimson Center and the director of the 38 North website. Joel, thanks for being with us. In his press conference Wednesday, President Trump said the decision not to meet on Thursday between the Secretary of State and the North Korean official was due to scheduling problems and that it would be rescheduled. Do you think there's more to it than that?
Well, I think that's very strange because they had only shortly before announced the details of the visit. And the week before, Secretary Pompeo kept hinting at, you know, this was going to happen. So, you know, in order to do all of that, they had to work out the travel details. And my understanding is the North Koreans had their plane reservations to come to New York. So it seems to me there must be some other explanation.
Would you care to venture a guess?
Yes, and well, that's exactly what it would be. It would be a guess. So there are a lot of different possibilities. One of them is that the North Koreans decided at the last minute that it just wasn't worthwhile meeting at this point because the positions are so far apart. And so a meeting might actually have a negative impact on the process. Another one is, you know, the United States may have gotten some cold feet too. You know, I think there is opposition inside the Trump administration to what President Trump is doing. President Trump is really forward-leaning and the rest of his administration is actually backward-leaning in terms of dealing with North Korea. So there may be some internal glitches going on there. And the last possibility is that maybe the North Koreans have basically decided they just want to wait until the next summit where they can deal with President Trump, who they much prefer to deal with.
How much room is there for not letting it get out of hand?
That's an excellent question because I think what we're seeing and what we've been seeing since the Singapore summit is a gradual erosion of this process. At least from my perspective, the summit was a promising start. But since then, we've seen a lot of backsliding from what President Trump promised. And, you know, I think the North Koreans are starting to get cold feet. They're starting to doubt whether the Trump administration is a reliable negotiating partner. And I can only wonder what the results of yesterday's election had on that calculation, because they may think that President Trump now is going to be tied down with all sorts of domestic political squabbles, and that may make him less reliable.
Joel Witt is a senior fellow at the Stimson Center and the director of the 38 North website. Joel, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Coming up, we check another election in another country. This one in Asia. You're listening to VOA Asia.
Hi, this is Lori London. Tune in to the Voice of America's newscasts. Every hour on the top of each hour, 24/7. Listen to our news and correspondent reports from around the world. VOA is your trusted source for news and information.
This news alert from VOA Asia. Boeing issued a special bulletin Wednesday addressing a sensor problem flagged by Indonesian safety officials investigating the crash of a Lion Air 737 that killed 187 people last week. Plainmaker said local aviation officials believe pilots may have been given wrong information by the plane's automated systems before the fatal crash. Visit VOA Asia Facebook every day for top stories and great features to see and share. This is VOA Asia. Since the start of the Me Too movement in late 2017, the hashtag has been used to demonstrate sexual abuse and harassment in the workplace around the globe. American actor Rose McGowan and South Korean poet Choi Young-mi discussed the movement and the challenges that still remain. VOA's Steve Miller has the story from Seoul.
It was a wave of sexual misconduct allegations against Hollywood mogul Harvey Weinstein in 2017 that launched the Me Too movement. American actor and Me Too activist Rose McGowan sees progress being made for those who have been affected by abuses of power, but current discussions are only the beginning.
It's flipped the tables on the conversation and the power imbalance. I think society righting itself, you know, again, we're only as sick as our secrets. And if so many of us have been hurt, and so many of us have, and I'm not just talking women, it's a pretty sick society, and we need to heal, and I think that's what we're doing.
South Korean poet and novelist Choi Young-mi is a prominent member of the South Korean Me Too movement. Me Too movement hasn't spurred many changes in South Korea, but Choi does see some improvements.
I don't think things have changed that much, but I heard that sexual harassment in the office has grown less and less. And it's also changed the office party culture to avoid Me Too charges.
McGowan says one of the biggest obstacles to enacting change is the media, which has pitted men versus women.
Which is not what it's about. Me Too is about, did this happen to you? Yes, me too.
And sharing those experiences can sometimes be difficult in South Korea, especially when it comes time to go to court, says Che.
The most frightening thing is for me to lose the trial. What if the witness doesn't tell the truth in the court? Will they keep their promise to testify? Will they perjure themselves because that man still has valid influence?
Che feels it's incumbent upon the South Korean government to set up a system to prevent sexual harassment and have laws empowering victims to hold the accused accountable. McGowan adds there's a need to continue pushing forward and move beyond the past.
It takes a lot of bravery. It takes people realizing that being brave doesn't mean you're not scared. It just means you do it anyway.
Steve Miller, VOA News, Seoul.
This news alert from VOA Asia, a Christian woman acquitted by Pakistan Supreme Court 8 years after being sentenced to death for blasphemy, was being flown Wednesday night to a facility in the capital of Islamabad from an undisclosed location in another province. Amid tight security, she left the detention facility in Punjab province for the flight to the capital. All the big stories coming your way through the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As we continue, as Thailand prepares for its first election since the 2014 military coup, opposition parties are expressing their views on the idea of a free and fair election. Steve Sanford has more.
Anticipation of a Thai election in 2019 is spreading across the country, but without all the fanfare of previous campaign trails. The military's ban on gatherings of more than five people, which was imposed after the 2014 coup, puts a restraint on rallies. Chiang Mai Red Shirt leader Dr. Pechawat, a longtime supporter of ousted Prime Minister Thaksin, says unfair rules are nothing new.
We are not entirely sure whether we vote for one of the new parties because the old party is suitable for us. We still have a problem to this day because the government uses laws with double standards and without justice.
Some candidates are creating new ways to reach voters, including the Future Forward Party's Bike for the Future.
Right now, we're going into the community using different methods of strategy other than Facebook Live. We've been distributing our activities and news onto our webpage. We're interacting with people face-to-face in different communities.
Critics say that even if an opposition party wins, the recently passed National Strategy Act will still empower the army for 20 years. An anti-corruption council can punish any government for failing to follow a broad range of rigid rules and deadlines.
If the elected government committed malfeasance by not following the recommendation, mandates of the 20-year plan, then the NACC can send a case to the Constitutional Court, and the Constitutional Court can rule that the elected government is out of power.
As the campaign rhetoric is expected to heat up, many Thais will be watching to see if it really is a return to democracy. Steve Sanford for VOA News in Chiang Mai, Thailand.
Vietnam and the United States said Wednesday that they have finished the cleanup of dioxin contamination at Da Nang Airport caused by the transport and storage of the herbicide Agent Orange during the Vietnam War. 30 hectares of land cleansed of the toxic chemicals were handed over to Vietnam at a ceremony. Vice Defense Minister Nguyen Chi Vinh praised the U.S. government's involvement in the cleanup. Large amounts of Agent Orange, which contains dioxin, were stored at Da Nang Airport. January will mark the 60th anniversary of the founding of Motown Records, which became world famous for its distinct sound and star performance like Michael Jackson, Diana Ross, Marvin Gaye, and numerous others. The Detroit-based company was topping the record charts during the 1960s, and its success continued after a move from Detroit to Los Angeles a little over a decade later. Motown Records was sold in 1994 and now operates under a parent company, but its name has become a symbol of an important era in American music. VOA's Lata Chahok reports on Detroit's efforts to build its legacy as a Motown city.
Detroit is making efforts to recover from years of economic decline, and reminding people of the city's music heritage is a large part of it. Detroit's main library provides space for local musicians to breathe new life into half-a-century-old Motown classics. Abdul Duke Fakir is an original member of the Four Tops.
There's got to be some kind of way that the Motown story and music can stay alive in Detroit. I mean, we were just as important to Detroit as cars.
One of the leaders of the crusade to revive the Motown genre, a blend of soul and pop, is singer Joan Belgrave, the widow of star trumpet player Marcus Belgrave.
There's no place that's dedicated to that genre, and this is Detroit. And people are shocked, honestly.
The Motown Museum in Detroit displays photographs from the company's golden era and is planning a major expansion. Some of the city's streets are getting named after famous Motown stars, such as Michael Jackson. And there is an effort to build a nightclub industry centered around the Motown sound. One of the company's greatest stars was Washington-born Marvin Gaye. His fans say his music resonates today as much as it did 40 years ago.
The more spiritual part of Marvin is that which I've clung to the most, what's going on, inner city blues. So as I'm listening to the song right now, I'm thinking about all the things that's happening in the world, that's happening in this country right now. And he was talking about it then, and it's relevant now.
When Berry Gordy founded Motown Records in January of 1959, he had no idea that he would become a celebrity himself. His autobiography was the basis for Motown the Musical that hit Broadway in 2013 and London 2 years later.
I wanted to tell the story of what Motown was all about. Yeah. I wanted to tell the story of how it felt, you know, the wins and the losses and triumphs and the disasters that happened along the way, and how it was that I happened to come up with it.
The West End musical is currently on a year-long tour of Britain and Ireland. Gordy says he set out to make good music, not just for black people, but for the whole world. Detroit wants to remind the world where it all started. Zlatica Hoke, VOA News, Washington.
You have been listening to VOA Asia. Get our program on iTunes and SoundCloud. And thanks for joining us, and thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, our engineer, John Ellison, our managing director, Diane Gao, and our team of Jim Stevenson, Skylar Ogden, Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, and Anna Cook. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Have a wonderful day.